Hi guys.
Fuck.
I'm an alcoholic. I'm like horribly sick and not feeling too great. So I'm really just gunning it tonight. And when I stop. It's definitely going to be like one of those nights. I have a lot I want to talk about tonight. A lot of ground to cover. To make way for next week, where I kind of get more into the idea of sponsorship. This week, I'm really just going to get into the meat and potatoes of the program, kind of like the fundamental stuff, like the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and the directions in there, and really what I would have described last week that I didn't have time to describe about what I want to talk about this week is really the process. I don't think there's a better way to necessarily describe. I guess the first 11 steps, arguably I'm just talking about 2 through 11 today, but the way it's been described to me is that it's a process. So like when people ask me this generic question, hey, you know, Pat, what's your favorite step out of the 12 steps? I really can't answer that, because I think you can't really talk about one step without talking about the other 11, you know, and how symmetrical things are, and how why we do what we do, and how it all ties into one another, and how this process is something that we do on a daily basis, but it's through applying these principles in our life that we're able to live relatively normal lives for all things considered, for being, you know, some low-bottom, dead-end people that, you know, except for 88 years ago, really had no chance of success whatsoever, with maybe a few brief moments in history that alcoholics started gathering together and found a solution by one alcoholic helping another. You know, the one thing I wanted to talk about before diving into the book is we just celebrated Founders Day. You know, July 10th, that was yesterday, right? And I've taken a lot of time to think about how in the last couple years, you know, I've been able to meet a lot of sober members of AA who are on fire, firing off on all cylinders, carrying this message. I really thought about, like, the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of alcoholics that I've gotten to meet who have a common problem like me and a common solution like me. But I also took time to think about the hundreds of millions of alcoholics bodies that we get to walk over on a daily basis as a result of being sober and being able to stay sober long enough and being able to watch people make decisions based on a place of self and make mistakes and ultimately suffer the true reality of, for most people who like drink and drug like us, which is, you know, not even jails and institutions, but just that fate of death, you know. And I was reading some stories about surveys that were taken back in the 90s. And I would listen to some speaker tapes that also talked about the surveys taken back in the 90s of where the fellowship's at. And they're going to do a pretty in-depth survey in the next couple years of where the fellowship's at, going into starting to write the fifth edition of the big book. You know, even back in the 1990s, there's only really like a 5% success rate in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, when I got sober in Alcoholics Anonymous and I got a big book sponsor, I started getting involved in the work. I probably got sober and was sponsored by a big book sponsor that was probably one of the most hated men in Alcoholics Anonymous. And he was a pretty controversial guy, and he would say a lot of things that would rub people the wrong way. And one of the things he used to tell me all the time is that we are not miracles, which is another cliche that you do hear a lot in Alcoholics Anonymous. But what he was talking about is that this concept of miracles are miraculous acts that can only happen by something that are beyond human power. Like something so much greater than what we were able to produce. Like even amongst each other, things that are so great that we can't as human beings actually create or do. But the big book does something that does something that you couldn't do up until 88 years ago when the fellowship started being created around us and they wrote this big book. They could promise recovery. Like, really take a second and understand. Like, we get this talk about these things in meetings called, like, some groups call the 12-step promises. It's really the 9-step promises, but they're really promises with every step you take. In the big book, whether you do them or don't do them for the most part, like, you can't promise a miracle. But if a newcomer was to walk in today, you know, and I was to give them an expectation of what it was like to work through this process, one of the things that I was told all the time by Big Book sponsorship is that faith is a result of results. I have to take an action to get a result to know if I take that same action again, I'll get that same result. I can't have faith in the process I've never been through, but that's why we come to believe in the second step. You know, the truth of the matter is that I don't even have to believe this works. I don't have to believe in my sponsor that it's worked for him. I don't have to believe, like, I could believe this is a cult, that people are really trying to get something out of me for why I'm here. But if I get a sponsor and I follow the directions outlined in this book, I will get the promises if I work those steps to the best of my ability as directed in this book. I will get those promises 100% of the time. You know, and not only there's the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous defined in this book and directed in this book, there's also these other two legacies with the 12 traditions and 12 concepts. And I don't care how far higher or low you are as far as the bottom goes, whether it be Park Ave or Park Bench, if you apply all 36 of those principles to your life a day at a time, at least from my experience from applying those principles every day of my life, I haven't found it necessary to take any mind or mood-altering substance for the last 7 years. And I've been able to watch people like my sponsor and his sponsor, who both have 15, 16 years each, not stay sober no matter what, and been able to watch people like my great-grand sponsor, who got sober in 1976, stay sober no matter what, and his sponsor, who recently passed away during the COVID, died with 63 years of continuous sobriety, stay sober no matter what. You know, this guy got sober and was sober long enough to even sit down in the same room as Bill Wilson and have a conversation with them. And this group, in that entire time, in that 60-some years of sobriety, had a sponsor, had a home group. You can listen to his tapes. There are a lot of his tapes out there. And, you know, he was doing the same things that I was being taught to do back in 2016 that I tell my guys to do today. You know, this book is so divinely written and perfectly imperfect the way it is, that this book is as relevant today in 2023 as it was back in 1939. And if you take the same oomph that you would take to, or at least a dying man would take to not die, and actually give this a chance and take these directions, you will get those results 100% of the time. So I talk a lot about the three legacies of Alcoholics Anonymous a lot when I talk. So I don't know if any of you guys have ever seen the circle and the triangle, but that's where I'm basing off the three legacies. So, and that triangle, well, that circle and triangle actually was the structure of Alcoholics Anonymous. In fact, it used to be printed in the early editions of the Big Book. Before we lost the copyright for the circle and triangle, it's a spiritual symbol, but in the circle and triangle, each line of the triangle is a legacy of Alcoholics Anonymous. The first legacy being recovery, the second legacy being unity, and the third legacy being service. And those are the steps, traditions, and concepts. And how this process that I've been talking to you about for the last couple minutes in the 12 steps was first described to me by describing an aspect of alcoholism I didn't really get to talk to a lot about last week, because I think when you start talking about the spiritual aspect of this program and being the problem, the true problem of the alcoholic, actually you really do have to spend a lot of time talking about it also being the solution. You know, when we, like it's promised in the big book around the fourth step, you know, when we straighten out spiritually, we'll straighten out mentally, physically as well. You know, this is a spiritual solution for a spiritual disease. And actually, if you how it was explained to me what we're doing here, really, this process begins in the chapter of We Agnostics, particular on page 55. And the second full paragraph. Actually, we're fooling ourselves. For deep down in every man, woman, and child is this fundamental idea of God. It is obscured by calamity, by pomp, and by worship of other things. But in some form or another, it is there. For faith in a power greater than ourselves and the miraculous demonstration of that power in human lives are as fact as old as man himself. So, by any chance, does anybody have a pen? This is actually a visual that was demonstrated for me. My sponsor used to write the circle and triangle. And this has been, originally when I first went through the 12 steps, this was how this process was explained to me, right? And I'm going to just draw everything that I've explained up until this point. Mind you, my handwriting is poo-poo, so just bear with me. So I've talked up until this point about the circle and triangle and the three legacies of Alcoholics Anonymous: recovery, unity, and service, which is the 12 steps, the 12 traditions, and the 12 concepts. And when my sponsor first began, or my first big book sponsor began to take me through this work, when he would reference the first step, he never talked about the physical or mental aspect of this disease. He didn't want to waste any time, honestly, because like Chuck Chamberlain talks about in his book, you know, I was viewing the world with a dirty pair of glasses, and I needed to go through a process that were going to clean off my glasses to where I get a whole new perspective of life and actually see what is and what isn't. And what my sponsor really explained to me is this concept of the spiritual dilemma for the alcoholic. So he talked about calamity, he talked about pomp, and he talked about worship of other things. So pomp, by definition, is talking about self. You know, selfishness, self-centeredness. You know, calamity, the chaos caused by self, and the things I get to do in my life to get those selfish desires. And worship of other things, which is the things I make my higher power. So in this case, generally in Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm talking about like alcohol. But for people like me, it could also be like drugs, it could be money, it could be the thrill of getting money to get drugs, it could be the thrill of money to get alcohol, it could be the thrill of just living life on the edge or living life without responsibility. It's whatever I in this world make my higher power. Because when we talk about like God, even in Alcoholics Anonymous, we're talking about in a spiritual aspect. We're not talking about something conceptualized in some sort of book like the big book like the Bible or the whatever sort of spiritual literature that's out there. But we're talking about something that is omnipotent, omnipresent. We're talking about something that's like way bigger than us. We're talking about something we can't touch, we can't conceptualize. But me as an alcoholic, like, I make things I can touch. Like, I can make, even in Alcoholics Anonymous, I can make this book my higher power. You know, I can make this entity, something that I try to fill with this void. And what my sponsor described to me with, and really alludes to in the third step of Alcoholics Anonymous, is selfishness, self-centered, is that we think is the root of all troubles, right? So like, being selfish is really the center core of the problem of the alcoholic. When we do our four-step and we really get down to the root causes of things, selfishness and self-centeredness is really the problem. But what my sponsor described to me is that alcoholism is essentially a broken series of relationships. So, you know, and this is what I got so far, and it's really hard to see. I could show you guys and pass it around after the meeting, because there's going to be a lot written on here. But what my sponsor described to me is that through our selfish, self-centered acts to seek these human resources become our higher power, we cause harm in the world. We cause damage to the world, right? So there's three relationships we ultimately destroy as a result of our alcoholism. Every time I drink, every time I drug, every time I take actions based on self to cause harm, to get drink, to get drug, I'm placing one brick in front of another between these three relationships in my life, right? So the relationships are my relationship with myself, my relationship with God, this higher power that we come in to believe in Alcoholics Anonymous, and my broken relationship with you. Not only the fellowship, but everybody, the human race in the world. And essentially, what we're doing in Alcoholics Anonymous and going through this process is actually repairing our broken relationships and these three aspects in our life. So on the first step, we're talking about we're powerless over alcohol, our lives have become unmanageable, the individual, right? So we're talking about myself there. And then step two, we're talking about coming to believe in a power greater than ourselves, right? And coming to believe in a God that we may or may never believed in the first place, that we may have never even thought was there to our lives. And that third step, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. That's making the decision to move forward, to jump both feet in, to repair all these relationships. And at the end of this process, we come full circle, and I'm brought back to you guys, right? Once I go through the amends process, make all my amends and stuff like that. So steps four and five, I take a large inventory and swallow large chunks of truth about myself, and I come to peace about large chunks of truth about myself, and I get honest with the sponsor. But on the other side of that fifth step, we have these fifth step promises where we start becoming free, and the first time in our lives after a long life lived up until that point, we start repairing our relationship with ourselves. And six and seven, we humbly ask God to remove our shortcomings. And for a lot of people who are atheists, agnostics, you're really, like, for the first time, possibly establishing a relationship with a God you may never even considered or believed in your entire life. And then steps 8 and 9, which brings it all back home, we go out in the world and we repair the damage of our past. And in the process of going through 4 and 5 and seeing the harms we've caused to others through our sex inventory and our resentment inventory, we create a list to where in 6 and 7 we have an idea of what our grosser handicaps are, to where in 8 and 9 we can start taking actions to change and become better people in the process to outgrow those defects of character. But what's kind of promised in the 9-step promises, but what's definitely my experience by going through the amends process, by the time you got on the other side of that halfway point, or even at the end of that 9-step, you're going to be dragged back and brought back into reality in the mainstream of society. I was my hometown's black sheep drug dealer. I come from white trash. I come from a family that has a really bad name with the local authorities in my town. And by the other side of my 9-step, I became a well-standing member of the PTA. You know, like, you can't even make this stuff up, but that's like the reality of like the miracle of healing that occurs. And then you can even break it down in step 10. You know, you're looking at yourself, You know, you're holding a daily inventory, holding yourself accountable, so that you don't have to go back and write 4 and 5, where you have to go to 6 and 7, then 8 and 9 again. You know, you have something daily you can hold yourself accountable to. 11, you're still growing in understanding and effectiveness with that experience you had at 9, with that God of your understanding. You're still trying to nurture and develop that through prayer and meditation. And then step 12, you know, I go out in the world, I'm able to help people, I'm able to sponsor others, and I'm able to move forward from there. And I'm going to write all that down real quick. 4, 5, 10, 2, 6, 7, 11, 3, 8, 9, 12. And this is the way it was explained to me what this process is going to look like. You know, and those corresponding legacies of Alcoholics Anonymous and those corresponding steps all intertwine with each other. If you want to see something really trippy and start studying the traditions and concepts, you can kind of see how that consistent pattern continues on, even through the other legacies of Alcoholics Anonymous. But that was like what was promised to me. And the only other thing I didn't really mention that I've kind of already mentioned in the last meeting when explained what this process is going to look like, and the importance of getting a home group and the importance of getting involved in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous within the service structure, is that, like I've already iterated, the first 164 pages that include the directions of how to work the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous also provide promises within every step. They also provide anti-promises, some of them, on if you don't do this step, like you're probably going to get drunk again, or, you know, faith that works is dead. So you got to imagine, like, within those 164 pages, there's like hundreds of promises. But what was explained to me was that the 12 steps and all those promises is only the legacy of recovery. You know, those are only 12 of the 36 principles that are offered in Alcoholics Anonymous. There's actually 24 others, which is really the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is not necessarily like the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous when people say, you know, meeting makers make it and don't drink, go to meetings. That's like you're involved in a home group. You got a coffee commitment at a home group. You go to business meeting at the home group. You put money in the basket at your home group meeting or the meetings you go to. You have group consciences of where that money goes and how that money's spent. Like, those are the things a well-standing member of Alcoholics Anonymous does. And then within the service structure, you know, get involved in the district level stuff, which not necessarily a lot of people do. But the point being is that there's just a lot, even for what I have to offer and talk about in this meeting tonight, I'm only talking about one third of all the power you can tap into in Alcoholics Anonymous. For somebody like me, who was in and out for at least 6 months when going to meetings and drinking at every meeting, like that, I can tap into to not only get a sobriety date, but if I take these actions and apply these principles to my life every single day, that could actually keep me sober and keep me sober the rest of my life, you know. And you know, what's even promised in the 10th step is that I could even get to a point in this process that I have a deep enough experience as a result of working these steps. Not only that, I necessarily don't have to take a drink or any minor mood altering substance anymore, but I don't even have to necessarily think about a drink anymore. Where that problem can seemingly be removed, and I'm placed in the place of neutrality and safe and protected. And I'm able to go to the most sordid locations, whether it be like the bar down the street to meet up some family members to have a family reunion, or go to a discussion meeting in Alcoholics Anonymous or whatever. You know, just I'm able, yeah, with my right motives in check, I'm able to live life as a free man. And I'm going to just start skipping around and talking about in a little bit more detail in the process. I can pass this around if anybody's interested in kind of looking at the little doodle I made up. But that was like when I first started sitting down with my first big book, my first real, like, in the literature big book sponsor. that was like the expectation that was set with me. And then to put in a little bit more perspective of what that process really looked like, thank you. The expectation to me was that I was going to, in my first 90 days of sobriety, or well, not first 90 days of sobriety, but for my first 90 days of working with this guy, I was going to be set up with my first 8 steps. I was going to get to my 9th step. He was going to put me in a position where I was going to be able to find all the amends that I needed to make on my 9th step. And I was put in a position to where I could start sponsoring others and pray and meditate every day. And I'll pretty much have all the principles I need to apply the rest of my life in my first 90 days of working with my sponsor that, like, I'll be good, you know? I just had to agree to some terms and conditions of some sponsorship etiquette and, you know, like being able to listen to him in those 90 days and follow blind direction outlined in the book and, you know, move forward from there. But I want to really... I'm going to read a little bit. So I'm going to actually start on page 58 of the book. And we're going to start at how it works. So, it talks about, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot, will not completely give themselves to this simple program. Usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. They are such unfortunates, they are not at fault, they have seen them and born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. So, you know, mind you, I'm also skipping around a lot because there are around at least 57 pages prior to this that really dive deep into step one and step two that really give a lot of I guess the word is ambiguous. It leaves a lot of room for interpretation and self-discovery, because what Bill Wilson does for the first step alone is that he spends a lot of time writing a lot of examples of what alcoholic drinking looks like, or at least up until page 24, and then from page 24 to page 43, he gives a lot of examples of what alcoholic thinking looks like. You know, and the truth be told, sitting here right now, is that even with step two, so much of that chapter isn't actually spent tinkering with the idea of God and a higher power. So much of that chapter is actually spent really dissecting this concept of the problem with not living a life by faith, you know, and really the conflictions and the problems of being an atheist and agnostic. But Bill Wilson has this fabulous talent of writing the same thing over and over and over and over again, but writing it differently, so he sounds really smart, but he constantly repetitively beating the same point home again and again and again and again. So when you read this book and you see words repeated consistently in a very short frame of a thought by Bill Wilson, Bill Wilson's really trying to emphasize the importance of hitting a point home. And in this first chapter, How It Works, he really emphasizes for the alcoholic that he needs to be honest throughout this process. It doesn't matter if you come from Park Ave or Park Bench. The truth is that if you're willing to get completely honest about yourself to another person and be able to repair the damages you've caused in your past, this is going to work every single time. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, what we are like now. If you decide you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. At some of these we balked, we thought we can find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnest at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us had tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was no until we let go absolutely. Remember, we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, and powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. But as one who is all power, that one is God, may you find him now. Half measured is availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps you took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. Another point. So when I take guys to the work, I usually take them through the first two steps and have discussions with them with what's talked about in the first couple chapters of the book. But when I get to this point of the book with the sponsee, I really do take the time to give them the expectation of what we're going to do moving forward from here. Like, it's going to really be like bang, 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 you know, next at once, next sort of thing. Essentially, from here, I'm going to go over the directions with the third step with the sponsor and what Bill Wilson describes being the directions with the third step and what the expectations are, and then give them this direction for the fourth step. If I'm sponsoring a guy, it usually takes a couple, like a month or two, to get through inventory and write three inventories that are outlined in the big book. At that point, we do a fifth step with my sponsee, and from there, I set him up with contact information. So, kind of a weird story. My sponsor used to sponsor a private investigator in Alcoholics Anonymous. So I didn't get out lucky with, like, being able to say, oh, I don't know where that person is. Because, like, my sponsor had a guy that was going to find him. But in payment for that, I guess amends for that, I'm not sure the right word I would use. I'd describe why I do what I do. But now I pay for a White Pages account that does background searches on a website. So, like, if my sponsees come to me with that same excuse, I'm able to use that resource to find people to make amends to them. But and I also, I'll mention, if anybody's looking for anybody right now, I do pay for those monthly searches, and it usually goes to waste. So if anybody is looking for anybody, just we'll talk. But you know, I was at least given the opportunity to make all those amends, and then. Even before this point, I was already set up with the directions to read Step 11 out of the Big Book every morning. When I was sponsored with my working with my first Big Book sponsor, I was supposed to call him every morning and read the pages 86 to 88 in the Big Book and leave it in a voicemail. It's brutal. I hate it, but that's the way we used to do it back then. Now I do a lot of different things. I like read. I still read 86 to 88 every morning, but I don't leave it on a voicemail. I do also do a nightly inventory with my sponsor that's outlined in the 11th step in the Big Book that I email them to every day. I don't have my sponsees do that. I probably should. It'd probably be better to hold everybody accountable. It's kind of hard to keep track of all the guys I sponsor, but you know, essentially by the time I get to my ninth step and I start making amends, I'm really set up to move forward with the rest of the steps to where I'm already practicing 10 and 11 with my sponsor and with myself, and then at 12, once I'm starting to make amends, I'm good to start sponsoring people. I'm going to skip to page 60. So it talks about our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic. So, the description of the alcoholic that is described from the doctor's opinion through pages 43 and the end of more about alcoholism. The chapter to the agnostic, the chapter we agnostics. And our personal adventures, you know, us as individuals, before and after our last drink. So that's before we stop drinking, and after we stop drinking, and how we still are restless, irritable, and discontent even after our last drink, make clear three pertinent ideas. A, that we're alcoholic and cannot manage our own lives, step one. B, that probably no human power can relieve our alcoholism, first half of step two. C, that God could and would if he were stopped, second half of step two. So, that's a quick conversation I have with my sponsees, if we're all on the same page there. I start off with the rest of step three. So, again, very interesting how there are two directions up until this point of the book. There's only two directions up until this point of the book on how to work the steps. So in More About Alcoholism, it talks about this idea that we had to fully conceive to our animal self that we alcoholic, that be the first step of the recovery. The delusion that we drink other like others presently or maybe has to be smashed. I can't find it right now. And the second step, talking about that we had to find a power greater than ourselves or find a higher power. But it's weird because they give us those two directions for the two individual steps throughout like 57 pages, more like 67 pages of in the book, but they don't actually give that much direction of like how to actually go about doing that. Like they don't actually give a lot of direction on how to actually conceive to our innermost self. Like really what Bill Wilson again does is just leaves a lot of descriptions of what it means to be alcoholic for you to interpret for yourself. You know, the doctor's opinion does talk about a physical allergy. More About Alcoholism talks about the lack of proportion or the inability to think straight. Could call nothing else but insanity, talking about the mental obsession. But of itself isn't... He leaves it pretty vague. And I think that's like on purpose. The idea is that because the truth is that for a lot of people, some people actually hit all the qualities that are described in this book. But for a lot of people... in Alcoholics Anonymous, there's a certain amount of skepticism. You know, going back to what I was talking about last week with that terminal uniqueness, that little thought in my head is like, you know, but you don't understand, my case is a little different. You know, I came in younger than everybody else in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I was sleeping on park benches, train stations, a little bit lower bottom than everybody else in the meetings I'm going to in Summit, New Jersey. Like, but the thing I don't understand as a newcomer or even somebody with time and sobriety is that that's all a delusion. And unless I put pen to paper and write inventory about that, what I don't see is physically, literally speaking, all I'm doing is keeping Alcoholics Anonymous' arm's length. You know, I'm keeping people who could possibly help me get into the solution or a part of the solution to being a part of a greater whole, like they talk about in the first tradition, away from me, ultimately keeping me sick. You know, and it's weird because, you know, we're given so little direction but a lot of room to help allow individuals like us, people who are selfish and self-centered like us, to kind of draw our own conclusions about these sort of things. Like, even when I talk to my sponsor about the second step, like, this isn't in the big book, but honestly, the only thing my sponsor asked me about the second step was, like, do you believe this is working for me? And I'm like, yeah, you're like 23 years sober and you smile. Like, that's more than I got. You know, like, I can agree to that. Like, there's not a lot of room to, like, twist and turns there. But, like, you know, and honestly, the reason why my sponsor does that is that he believes, again, with the Chuck Chamberlain thing, with the dirty pair of glasses, like, the mind of an active alcoholic before he works his steps, like, you're just going down the rabbit hole when you start asking him about God. And honestly, he's probably talking about something he's never experienced up until that point. So, big difference between, you know, what we do in Alcoholics Anonymous and what you may experience when growing up. When you're growing up with a particular sect or denomination or some sort of church, is that what you hear, and something like I grew up in a Catholic Christian church, is that I was hearing a lot of conception about what God is and isn't. You know, but what we're doing here in Alcoholics Anonymous, which is really alluded to in Appendix 2 of the big part of the big book, is that we're talking about having an experience with God. We're not talking about having a conception. We're not trying to actually figure out God. Like, it's ironic that it talks about and see that God could and would if we were sought. Like, we just got to look for him. We don't actually find him. We just look for him. You know, and that's like the craziest part about this process. Like, you know, growing up, you know, I grew up in a bar. Most of my family live out in Middlesex County, and they've owned bars for a long time. And growing up, I'd watch my family drink. And I always had a fun time drinking. My younger cousins used to drink. They were around my age. And I always wanted to drink. And I always talk about how great drinking was and what I thought it was going to be like and what was it look like. One day I was over at my friend's house and went over there, my friend's house and to my parents, my friend's parents' bar. And we just stole some alcohol and we actually drank it. We drank a lot of hard liquor and we got drunk. And I had an experience with that. And that's what it's a lot like coming in Alcoholics Anonymous, like conception. Like, I can talk to you about what it was like to get drunk. I can talk to you what it's like, what God, I think God is and isn't. But what we're trying to have here is, we're trying to have an experience. Like, we're not literally trying to get drunk, but like, you know, like, we're trying to, like, actually, like, dive both feet in it and, like, get experience with something that is beyond even our comprehension. And, the beginning of that process really starts off here on page 60. So, being convinced we're at step 3, which is that we've decided to turn our will and life over to the care of God as we understood Him. Just what do we mean by that and just what do we do? The first requirement is that we be convinced that any life run on self-will will hardly be a success. On that basis, almost always in collision with something or somebody else. Even though our motives are good. I just checked the time, so I'm going to kind of bounce around a lot more now. So this is really the first direction that Bill Wilson gives us definitively in the big book on how to work step 3. That the first requirement that we be convinced that any life run on self-will could hardly be a success. And it starts talking about this concept of an actor being the director. So if anybody here hasn't actually read that, like, yeah, if anybody's never been to a play before, an actor is supposed to act in a role they're assigned in the play. They're not the director. They're not the person that's supposed to be dictating what's going on in the play. So, you know, with the alcoholic, you know, being compared to this, Bill Wilson talks about over and over again in the big book, this concept of the alcoholic being the actor, being the director instead of the actor. And it talks about, you know, even if the alcoholic gets his way, even if everything it suits him well, like, he's still not happy. And then it talks about selfishness and self-centeredness. That we think is the root of our troubles. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity, we step on the toes of our fellows and then retaliate. So, already Bill Wilson's dropping hints about what the rest of this process is going to look like. Selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, self-pity, which is the fourth column of the fourth step. We step on the toes of our fellows and we retaliate, which is the third column of the fourth step. Sometimes they hurt us, seemingly without provocation. Again, for second, third column of the fourth step. But we invariably find that sometime in the past we've made decisions based on self, which later placed us in a position to be hurt. And right there, Bill Wilson's giving a preview of what process we're about to go through moving forward. So I'm just going to skip around really for the next couple steps and just hit on some really key points and beliefs I have when taking guys to the work. I'm not going to get down to nitty-gritty with a lot of it. So there's this direction here that is finally given by Bill Wilson on page 62. This is the how and why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Next, we decided in the hereafter of the drama of life that God is going to be the director. He is the principal. We are His agents. He is the Father. He is the children. Most good ideas are simple, and this concept was the keystone of the new triumphant arc through which we passed to freedom. So there's the direction for the third step and what we're really doing in the third step. So the next paragraph is the third step promises, and the paragraph after that is the third step prayer. So it talks about this. We sincerely took a position. All sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer. Being all-powerful, He provided what we needed. If we kept close to Him and performed His work well, established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs, and more we became interested in seeing what we can contribute in life. As we felt new power flow in,
As we enjoyed peace of mind, we discovered we could have faced life successfully. As we become conscious of His presence, we began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, and the hereafter we were born. We were now at step three. Many of us said to our Maker as we understood Him, God, I offer myself to Thee, that buildeth me, and to do with me as Thou wilt, relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do Thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help with Thy power, Thy love, Thy way of life, may I do Thy will always. We thought well before taking this step, making sure we're ready, that we can abandon ourselves utterly to Him. So, what I thought when I got sober was, there was a direction with promises and then a prayer. So if I say the prayer, I get the promises, right? Because that's what I saw. But if you consider that in chronological order, there's a direction to allow, to allow God to be God. You know, be the Father and we be His children, etc., etc. And by taking those actions, we get a promise and then we have a prayer. What I didn't understand until I got a big book sponsor is that that prayer is a decision you make on the third step. But the third step of itself, like that prayer is just an affirmation. But the truth is that with how you allow God to be your new employer, like it talks about in the promises, is that you have to work the rest of the steps. And by taking the actions through steps 4 through 9 at minimum, you know, you're essentially allowing God to be the new employer. And by taking those actions at steps 4 through 9, you're allowing God to be your new employer. And that's when the third step promises come in, is when you take the action steps 4 through 9. And what ends up happening with the third step prayer is that all you're doing is making the decision to move forward with the rest of the step work and take the actions through steps 4 through 9. And, alright, now I'm just going to kind of shout out some stuff I usually say when I talk about all these other steps. Actually, there's one thing I do want to read in step 5. So in step 4, you know, we talked a lot already about how Bill Wilson talks about the actor being the director. So when I first got sober, I didn't really have a 4-step. I had more like a hit list. Like, I was ready to just go nuts on some people when I got sober. But you know, I stay sober, I take some inventories, and that starts growing. And what I started really getting into was you guys are probably familiar with this, with a lot of the Joe Hawk and Mark Houston tapes. And I think they talk about, what does Mark Houston call it? The, I forget what he calls it when he has it, but essentially he takes that comparison of how Bill Wilson talks about the alcoholic actor being the director, and really amplifies it on how to write inventory about that. And it talks about in the 4-step writing about people, institutions, and principles, right? So like when I got sober, people and institutions were really easy. But the later I stayed sober, the more inventories I started to write, I started writing a lot more about principles. And what I got from the people I got sober with, that first big book sponsor and like the Mark Houston tapes, is that you could really take this concept of the actor and write inventory about it when writing about beliefs and principles. And how I did that was that I used to write inventory on myself, but I would write inventory on myself of the sort of actor I was being in situations in life. So, like, and I would ask myself, like, what are the roles I'm playing in each situation in my life? So recently I went through a breakup. So I wrote a lot of inventory on how I viewed myself as a boyfriend. You might be thinking to yourself, how does that really work? But you even hear, like, with how I describe talking about writing inventory on myself, I am talking about writing inventory on myself. You're talking about two different people. You're talking about me, the individual, but then I'm talking about I, the ego. The I is the actor. You know, the I is that looking, that perception I have of myself in the world. And the truth is that I is the first three columns on my 4-step. Like, if I write inventory correctly and I got a good big book sponsor, and by the time I'm done with the 5th step, or at least the way I write inventory, like, I still write inventory, like, Big Book Awakens, like long form, third column where I'm really writing detailed thoughts about myself and beliefs about myself. Like, if I'm doing inventory right and I'm reading inventory right and I'm getting honest, by the time I'm done with the fifth step with my sponsor, the only thing true on my fourth step should be my fourth column. Everything I wrote from the first to third column should be bullshit. And if I can't see that by the other time I'm done with my fifth step, I'm probably lying to my sponsor. But then writing that sort of inventory, you know, I've been able to, like, you know, really dissect some really philosophical stuff about myself and other people. Like, even stuff like marriage and monogamy and, like, I don't know, like, even being literally an employer, like, being a boss. Like, I used to manage stores and, like, being a worker and stuff like that, and really exploring a lot. And a couple hints on what you're going to experience if you've never written inventory before is that what I thought I was going to do when I first wrote inventory with my Big Book sponsor, dude, I was ecstatic for starters because I was going to read inventory to somebody who's heard hundreds and thousands of inventories. This guy sponsored hundreds of people, and I couldn't wait to get some input from him about some stuff. And I literally told him one day that I was so excited about learning so much about myself and God and you guys. And I was like, no, you're not going to do that. Because so much of the fourth and fifth step isn't learning. It's about unlearning. It's about unteaching. It's about actually drinking, like, spiritual Drano to where you're actually cleaning out yourself and really addition by subtraction. And you actually learn less about I've learned less about myself, God, and others, and got freer in the process when I thought I needed to learn something new. You know, and what I ended up discovering over time that sometimes I trade seats at the same table, and, you know, my beliefs turn into what I think is freedom and, you know, being humble and turn into new beliefs, and I have to write more inventory. But that's just it. You know, it's really been a never-ending process. And something my current sponsor really talked about when I was writing inventory with him. Where is it? There's one each. Where is it? All right, so when I did a fifth step with my sponsor this time around, after I kind of had a rough patch and I got a new sponsor, and he's been my sponsor for the last year now, Bill Wilson talks about on page 73 into action, this small paragraph right here, more than most people, the alcoholic leads a double life. He is very much the actor in the outer world. His presence is a stage character. This is the one that he likes his fellows to see. He wants to enjoy a certain reputation, but knows that it's hard. He doesn't deserve it. And what my sponsor really emphasized me to do is that, you know, over time I got really good at writing inventory and putting up a really good stage front on, like, you know, the way I am in life. And can I get a tissue, by the way? Anybody? Sorry. Still sick. You know, I, thank you. I can get really good putting up front in Alcoholics Anonymous, and when you stay sober long enough and you know the literature, you know, it can get really easy to get like that. In fact, there was a woman I got sober with named Karen Karate. Used to always, I broke anonymity there, my bad, but, there's a woman I got sober with that used to always talk about the hardest 12-step call you ever go on is in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because it's like, especially once you've had an experience with the book, it's hard to go up to somebody with time that is clearly struggling and be like, hey, you're struggling? Like, do you need some help? Like, it's easy when that person with time is struggling, but, you know, like, I had one guy I used to sponsor. When I got sober, he had 20 years, and 2 or 3 years into my sobriety, he got out of the psych ward after a suicide attempt, and he was just like, dude, I'm struggling. I don't know what to do. Everybody was avoiding him. Like, what are you supposed to do with a guy with 23 years that doesn't have all the answers? You know, and, like, I ended up sponsoring him, and I'm still friends with him today. But, like, yeah, like, even today, like, dude, I am not impervious from my own hubris, and I end up in very sticky situations when I get too far from a sponsor. And you know, it's why I have a sponsor. It's why I have the type of sponsor I have today. It's why I'm a part of a home group that hold me accountable. That's why I have sponsees and to like other people I 10-step with that I talk to and other friends. You know, those are all safeguards for my own ego. And a couple other things I really want to touch on with the fourth and fifth step is that the best advice I was ever given when writing my first four step is that I should write the worst four step I'm ever going to write. And the second piece of advice I was given when writing inventory the first time around is that the whole point of writing a four step is to finish it. Like, the four step isn't something that's meant to be on for like 4 or 5 years. Like, it's meant to be something that, like, essentially gets done to where you can read it to somebody. If you're like me, you're going to definitely take future inventories. Like, that's inevitable. So, obviously, the first one's not going to be perfect. But, and if more things are going to come up, you know, life's going to happen if you're anything like me. But, you know, don't be afraid to just, like, you know, put it all out there on paper just so you get it done to move on to the rest of the steps. And my real talk with 6 and 7, because I have sponsorship that's big into, like, Sandy Beach and stuff like that, but, like, the way I understood it when I first went through the big book with my sponsor was the real change that occurs with your character defects in 6 and 7 doesn't really occur until you take the actions in 8 and 9. And what happens when you get to 8 and 9 and you choose to stay at 8 and never actually make amends, if you did a proper 4 and 5 step and you read inventory to a sponsor and you got honest with them and you saw truth there, but you're not willing to make amends, you're co-signing that behavior you were acting out on that caused all that harm in the first place. So that could be like, you know, serial cheating on your significant other, that could be debting, that could be fraud, that could be robbing, cheating, stealing. Like, if you're not okay, if you're not willing to make an atonement for those behaviors, then chances are you're only setting up to allow it to happen again. And the whole thing with 8, 9 is to change. I don't think any of you guys have heard my, like, story I would usually give behind the podium, like, at a typical speaker meeting. But, like, you know, I had some very profound amends process. But the big thing when I went through the amends process was made direct amends, which is, like, face-to-face amends, like, sitting in front of people like I am to you guys right now. And such people wherever possible, inferring to the fact we can finish all our amends on our eighth step, except when to do so would injure them or others. And my sponsor made it really clear to me that I'm not others. So my sponsor gave me a number to a private investigator and told me good luck. And that's kind of how it went. You know, I ended up making people, like, people tried stabbing me, people, like, gotten fights with, people I tortured all my life, and I've had some really profound results of going through the amends process and that miracle healing that occurs from there. But, and it's also a little different, because when I finally went through the amends process and I was really making amends between that 4 or 5 year mark, or really 2 to 4 year mark in my sobriety, one thing you really got to compare me away from you guys to, I was only like 22, 25. So, like, honestly, if I made amends and I had to go to jail, it wasn't like I had a wife I was leaving. It wasn't like, you know, like I had a lot of responsibilities. So I had that opportunity to really go out there and make all those amends. But, like, when I have a sponsee today that has, like, a wife, kids, all that stuff, and, you know, there's a crime that needs to be amended for within the statute of limitations. You know, that's something I usually suggest they would have to go and talk to them about, because you have more responsibility than just yourself. You know, I'm not saying that with sponsees that have been unfaithful to their significant others. That's a little different, you know. Like I had to do a study on to the family afterward a couple weeks ago. And, like, I kind of disagreed with most of the chapter. I have no problem getting my sponsee's ass whooped. You know, they kind of deserve it to a certain extent. Like, they got to hear it, you know, how bad it was. Like, I needed to know that I wasn't necessarily that good of a person, because the truth is that I had a reaction that made me feel like a piece of crap. And, you know, the only conversation I really had with my sponsor at 6 and 7 is the simple question my sponsor asked me after my hour meditation, and he just was like, "Hey Pat, do you see, like, what you were like in your inventory? Are you done being an asshole? Because if you are, like, let's go. You know, that was it. You know, like, you, but, oh, and I also will mention this, too. So during that period of making amends originally on my first inventory, it talks about in the eighth step, made a list of all persons we have harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. So there's an action there, right? Because you have to become willing to make amends to them all before you go out and actually make amends to them all. And my sponsor actually, he gave me like 5 amends at a time to start doing. And he actually told me to pray on every one of those amends every morning until I finished all my amends instead of reading my 11th step. And for 2 years, I would pray for the willingness for every amend I had on my 8th step left to go out there and make it. And that's what I did between years 2 through 4, and I've redone inventory since then, and I haven't been perfect. Like, I mean, I'll get honest with you guys, like, you know, when I did a 5th step with my sponsor, I had a lot of sexual abuse and trauma when I was growing up, and a lot of crazy stuff happened. So, like, at 2 years sober, like, you know, I was working at an Acme, I was in sales, I was at customer service at a grocery store, and I was on my amends process, I was making my amends, and at one point, at 2 years of sobriety, sponsoring guys, making amends and all that stuff, I had an incident where I ended up getting sexually assaulted at that job. And I didn't even think of bringing it up until I was 5 years sober and I was redoing inventory, and it kind of came up on accident when I was redoing inventory with the sponsor. It's like, I was in such a bad space, but like that's what I'm saying. Like, you know, I've been no saint. I've not been perfect. Like, life has been life, you know? And with, like, steps 10 and 11, like, I don't know, I've gotten a little lazy, but I, like, when I was 2 years sober, I would, like, spend 35 minutes every morning praying and meditating. I still do it. Like, I still do it. I'm a lot lazier with it. I used to either listen to Mark Houston, Joe Hawk speaker tapes, or, that's another thing. So when I sponsor guys, one of the first things I do is actually take them through a guided prayer meditation. And, so I was taught with prayer meditation, repetition strengthens and confirms. Like, spirituality is a lot like a muscle, actually. It's not something that you just worked out by running 3 hours one time or working out 3 hours one time, and all of a sudden you're a fit spiritual condition. Like, the spirituality comes in when you do the same action day in and day out for months on end. That's when the experience comes in. Like, same thing with working out. You work out every couple days, every week for months on end. That's when you actually develop strength and develop muscle. You know, and, you know, it's been through that, I used to develop 10-step buddy too. That's probably the last thing I'll talk about, is that I used to read inventory with some of the guys in my sponsor lineage, so I got to call them up and we were on the same page to do 10 steps. And the 10th step in the big book, there's directions on how to take it, I'm not even in the mood to talk about that right now, but there's directions there if you want to read it. It's on pages 84. And, you know, I hold myself accountable. And it's through doing good 10 and 11 step actions on a daily basis that, you know, I don't have to always go back and redo a 4th and a 5th step and have stuff like that come up. But with that said, that's all I got with really a very speeded up version with steps 2 through 11. So next week, I plan on bringing a guest. I'm going to really get into sponsorship and my experiences with sponsorship with hopefully one of my sponsors. But again, thank you, Mark, for having me again this week. And that's all I got this week.